Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the SIS Limited Q3 FY23 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touchtone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Bharat Bakshi, President, M&A, Investor Relations and Ventures from SIS Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our Q3 FY23 earnings call. Along with me, I have our Group Managing Director, Rituraj Sinha, and our Group CFO, Devesh Desai. I hope everyone has had a chance to look at our results and the earnings note, which has been uploaded on the stock exchanges and the company's website. We are happy to report that the business continues to show strong revenue growth with a good improvement in margins also this quarter. This quarter we recorded our highest ever revenue of rupees 2,904 crores. The India security business grew 4.6% quarter-on-quarter and 21% year-on-year. The strong growth continues. In facility management also, especially, the business grew 5% quarter-on-quarter and 35.2% year-on-year. In fact, this is the third quarter in a row that the facilities management business has grown at 35% or higher year-on-year. On the international side, with one-time COVID-related contracts falling off, we are seeing a return to pre-COVID growth levels with other business coming in. Our cash logistics JV is also seeing extremely strong growth with 11.5% quarter-on-quarter and 51.7% year-on-year growth. As you can see, we are seeing very good business growth now across all segments. We are also very happy to inform you that margins are up almost 40 basis points this quarter compared to the previous quarter. Our two largest segments, which is India security and international business, reported better EBITDA margins, which moved the consolidated margins up. Again, overall, we are very happy with the business momentum. We will now turn it back over for Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may enter star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may enter star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Swarnish Chatterjee from Ashtrix. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Yeah. My question is, in the India business, the security and facility management, what is the opportunity to cross-sell? I believe, the correlation between your client will be very less, so there should be an opportunity to cross-sell.
At the moment, 6% of our customers who are in security use facility management services. You are right that there is significant headroom for cross-referencing or cross-selling, and we are working on it. We have created in the top 20 cities in the country, we have created what we call city coordination groups, where a monthly lead exchange program has been formally institutionalized between all SBUs to, you know, maximize the cross-sell opportunity. At the moment, it's only 6%.
Okay, sir. There was a talk about selling intelligence security system to leading PSUs like SBI ONGC, and which would have significantly higher margin than current 4%-5% rate. Anything about that?
Our WeProtect business has, which does alarm monitoring, has roughly 13,000+ connections now. We have secured another 7,000 connections from banks mostly, which is basically a manless security where we are leasing equipment, alarm equipment. We are monitoring that 24/7 and providing emergency response service. It's alarm monitoring response service on an OpEx model. And these contracts have come in at EBITDA margins of 20% plus.
Okay, sir. And my last question is, there was a talk about wage increases in Australia, and that is that has to be passed on to you via your customers. So
let me remind you that all our contracts across India and other jurisdictions, including Australia, have an automatic price escalation clause on a pro rata basis. Basically, it means that if the minimum wage goes up by 1%, you know, we correspondingly increase, pass through that increase to our customers. And that's not something that we negotiate. It's built into contract. However, there is always a time lag. With the announcement, we start paying first, and then we put up invoices to customers. They sometimes need to go for budget revisions, etc., which may take, internal process may take a little bit of time. It is generally a 3-month cycle for this catch-up to happen. So this is a routine affair for the business in India and Australia. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen the impact of this on several occasions in the past 5 years.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may enter star and one. The next question is from the line of Rohan Bukme, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so hello everyone. First of all, thanks for the opportunity. So my questions are, is there any moat in our business? And if we plan to scale a business, so how do we plan it without linear increase in manpower? And third is, who are our biggest clients and how do we scale in getting big clients?
So the biggest moat in the business, I'd say, you know, this business, this industry does not have barriers to entry. It's, you know, it's fairly easy for somebody to set up a security company or a facility management company. But the barrier is to scale. You know, and I'll give you the statistics. There are more than 15,000 licensed private security businesses in India. But only two of them have revenues of more than 2,000 crores. Less than 200 of them have revenues of more than 200 crores. So clearly barriers are to scale. And our moat is basically the fact that we have built a pan-India network of branches. We serve across 650 districts of the country. Number two, we've built a very robust supply chain, you know, with 14 residential training academies to supply trained manpower across the country at short notice. Number three, we've built a very robust system platform, you know, where there is ARC technology for recruitment quality control. There is IOPS for operational management in a paperless fashion and on real-time basis. There is MySIS now, which is our automated digital facial recognition-based attendance platform. These are all proprietary software platforms that help us manage over 250,000 people. So these are the general moats of the business, and that's what has helped SIS scale over the years.
Okay, thanks for that. And wanted to understand, in future, how do we scale the business without increasing the manpower?
Well, this business involves manpower, so increase of revenue will have increase in manpower. They cannot be separated. That's the nature of the industry. But at the same time, as we start selling more and more technology and more solution-based things, like I was just explaining in the last question, we have sold so many connections in alarm monitoring and response to banks. They don't involve manpower. That's alarm monitoring and response, which does not have physical component other than the responders. So that also is a part of our solutions play. So as the share of such contracts goes up, you'll have more revenue. So it, the correlation is not one is to one. It's not a direct correlation that for every dollar to increase, manpower must increase. But there is a heavy connection, I'd say.
Okay. Yeah, I'm asking this because a large amount of our revenue goes into the employee expense, right? So that's why, and our revenue is growing in an exponential manner, but our profits are a little stagnant, right? So that's why I was asking.
You're right. For the last few quarters, the profits have been stagnant, and that has been explained in previous calls. But I'm very happy to share that our security services business in India, which was reporting 3.9% all-time low EBITDA 3 quarters back, is back to almost 4.9% this quarter. So it's a 1% plus change in 3 quarters. So as volume comes back, margins will also come back. And we are very hopeful that the security business will track towards 6% in quarters to come.
Okay. And also I wanted to understand regarding the clients. So, like, who are the biggest clients that SIS has and how we are planning to get more big clients?
You know, one of the reasons that SIS has maintained almost 1 to 2% month-on-month revenue growth is because our contracts don't come from 1, 2, or 3 major clients. In fact, out of the 3,000 quarterly revenue that, near about 3,000 quarterly revenue that we report, no single client contributes more than 1% of revenue. So on a monthly basis, if you do 1,000 crores, no client is reporting more than, is worth more than 10 crores per month revenue. Right? So we are not dependent on large clients to come and then give us business. We are a very diversified portfolio. The beauty of security facility management type services that everybody needs it. Whether it's a shop, it's a mall, it's a factory, it's an office, it's a cinema hall, it's a hospital, it's a hotel, they need guards, cameras and cleaning staff.
Okay, thank you. And just wanted to understand one more thing, that in future, will there be any rule or anything that will create a moat around this business that no other party would enter? That's what I understand. In future, not now, but in future.
No, I think I don't see this industry becoming a monopoly anytime soon. This will not be a monopoly or duopoly. Globally, there are multiple operators in this sector across the world. But when it comes to market share, generally there will be one, maximum two operators who are the dominant market shareholders. But there will always be hundreds and thousands of security and facility management companies operating.
Okay. And sir, I wanted to understand what is the impact of recession and other stuff that is happening in the environment to the SIS?
I think you should study the quarterly reports pre-COVID to now. It will give you a clear picture. We are a recession-resistant segment. In the first year of COVID, which was FY21, we grew 7% when the Indian economy contracted. In the second year of COVID, FY22, we grew 10% when the Indian economy was just getting back on its feet. And this year, FY23, as the economy in India picks up to whatever 6% plus growth, I'm pretty sure that we will grow 2x of GDP.
That's it, sir. Okay. And, okay. Yeah. And just wanted to listen, the last question is regarding the net profit. So are we still in line towards 20% profit growth?
As a matter of practice, we don't give guidance in that relation. But as you can see, our in this quarter is probably the best ever at 103 crores. So, you know, we also have a significant advantage of ATJJA. and as the business grows, the 80JJ will kick in more, and I think that will show up on the profit after tax line. I guess there is a few other people on the queue, so if you don't mind, if you can join the queue back. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may enter star and one. The next question is from the line of Vidit Shah from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for taking this. My first question was on the international business. So you spoke about the wage inflation being passed on, but with, like, you know, a 3-month lag. But has all of it been passed on as we are right now in Feb 23?
Yes, at the end of Q3, all of it was passed on. So we will have a full quarter effect, also partly flowing through in Q4. Largely all of it has been passed on by the end of Q3.
Okay, understood. And could you just elaborate on these profit improvement initiatives that you've taken that you expect to yield results in the coming quarters in the international business?
Yeah, so as part of a regular exercise, what has been done this time is that every site, every customer contract has been analyzed at a P&L level. So the revenue and the cost of each site, each contract has been picked up and analyzed. Low margin sites or low margin contracts have been picked up for special review and action to see whether there have been any cost creeps over there, whether there have been scope creeps over there, whether we are getting all the revenue, and whether there is any leakage. We're checking each and every contract, each and every site, to make sure we maximize whatever we expect to get from each site. So it's a laborious exercise, going through the last few months of P&L, going through every contract, going through every site, creating an action plan, going back, making some actions on the ground, managing the roster more efficiently. You know, so there's hundreds of actions which are going on, and that's the action plan which is being drawn up so that the operational teams can actually implement it, and then we deliver profit improvement back into the system.
Got it. So do you have any, you know, target margins or something like that below which you pick up contracts to improve anything of that sort that you've targeted?
So generally there is an approval matrix which kicks in for contracts and various margins. Some contracts may be picked up at a lower margin for strategic reasons. There could be high volume contracts. So there's a whole host of reasons why contracts get picked up, as in any business, as you would know.
But let me just add and supplement there that apart from the approval system, the more important thing is that the gross margin of SIS Security, for example, has moved up by almost 1% in the last 2 quarters. And that is reflecting on the bottom line EBITDA as well.
Sure. But that would be a result of, you know, passing on the wage inflation as well, right?
It's passing on the wage inflation, securing contracts at better rates. It's a whole host of reasons.
Okay. And on the FM side, you know, what's happened to the margins there? They've dropped after seeing a couple of quarters of improvement. You know, are there any one-offs, and could you quantify those, if any?
So we explained the reasons. There have been some one-off costs which have taken place during the quarter. As you know, we deploy a large amount of investment. Large amount of equipment at the customer sites, and periodically we have to monitor, manage and maintain those equipment. Now, unfortunately, in this quarter, a lot of the equipment came off for the regular repair and maintenance cost, which led to an increase in the cost. We have a few fixed price contracts. As Ritu had explained earlier in the question, that while we have our price escalation clauses linked to minimum wages, in the case of fixed price contracts, it sometimes takes a bit longer to get that price increase through the system while the cost increase has already come through the system. We also had, at request of clients, there were certain supplies of products and services made which the clients wanted us to route through our books. There was no margin on that. It was just a facilitation for the client. Now, all of these things, if you look at mathematically and run a formula, then the percentage has percentage of EBITDA has come down in this quarter. But yes, we've got a lot of actions in place. We doing a lot of corrective stuff on the ground in this business also. So hopefully in the next one or two quarters, we'll start trending back up.
Right. So if I'm understood correctly, this quarter was an aberration, and the next few quarters should start in, seeing an improvement from the 4.5% that we used to do in the first half of the year.
Yes, definitely.
Got it. And just one last question on the tax accounting, maybe quite a basic question, but if you could just take us through how, you know, the ATJJAA benefits are, you know, accounted, and, you know, because we, since the last three quarters, we've been seeing, you know, tax gain on the books. My understanding was that, you know, only the tax payable can be offset. So just wondering how the gain arises.
No, sir. So the way it works is that because I hope you know how the ATJJ tax benefit works. It's a benefit you get over 3 years. So you compute the benefit on year one based on the additional number of people you employed and the additional wages you paid for those new employees. 30% of that is taken as a tax benefit, as a deduction from your income every year, and over 3 years. Now, what happens is because of the way the accounting standards work, and because there's a certainty of getting the next 2 years of tax deduction in their respective years, you are required to create a deferred tax asset for those 2 years' benefit in the first year itself. So every year you actually account for the benefit of the current year, plus you account for the benefit of the future 2 years. And in that second year and third year, that deferred tax asset is then brought down from the balance sheet into the P&L as an expense. So that's how the whole chain works and the whole cycle works. And that is why you see a net gain coming in the tax expense rather than a net expense coming in that line.
I mean, so has there been a change? Because, you know, like, let's say we had some good growth in headcount even in, you know, FY19-20, but we didn't see such a high gain taking place in those years compared to, let's say, 23, where we're still growing very handsomely, but we've seen a big benefit on the deferred tax front as well.
So in FY20-21, there was no net increase in the number of employees. So in that year, there was no ATJJ tax benefit banked and accounted in the books.
Also, this is like, you know, impact of a very low base of FY22, which we're seeing right now.
So FY22, I had a benefit, and FY23, I'm continuing the benefit. FY21 was the first year of COVID, where there was net no increase in the number of employees, and that is why I was not able to bank any benefit in that year.
It's not low base. It's just that FY21, we had marginal growth. If you remember, security business in India had like 1% growth in FY21. In FY22 and FY23, obviously, it's growing much better. We're recruiting more. We are banking more benefit of ATJJ.
Okay, so any guidance you could give us for the tax rate that the company could, you know, have given, you know, 20% odd growth in the India business with ATJJAA?
So effectively, the tax rate is, as you will see, continue to be at this level, which is zero. Standalone company will be zero. Standalone India operations will be zero. There will be a net income or the net positive charge in the tax line and not a negative charge. International, of course, has a tax rate, but on a blended basis, we are close to zero.
Okay, got it. Right. That's it for me for now. I'll get back at you. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Alok Deshpande from Nuvama Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon, Ritaj. My first question is on the international business margins. Now, going forward, how should we look at those margins for the next maybe 4 to 5 quarters, given that the ad hoc contracts have gone out, etc.?
Well, like I've said, Alok, in the past, if you remember pre-COVID, international business was a 4.5% EBITDA margin business. In the COVID years, they got a lot of temporary contracts, high margin contracts, so they went up to 6%, which was an aberration. Now what we are witnessing in FY23 is that all those high margin short-term contracts are out. We are only working with regular contracts. And therefore, we are settling down towards the 4.5% margin. I would say that you should factor that 4.5% in the coming quarters.
Okay. And we are annualizing the international business at about, I'm guessing, about 5,000 crores, which is 1,250 quarter. Now, in terms of growth, then what should we look at?
Well, I think in FY23, our greatest challenge was that as almost 45-50 million worth of temporary contracts exit the system, our revenue should not contract. You know, that whole of 45-50 million of temporary contracts had to be filled by regular new wins. And I'm very happy that in FY23, it looks like we may not have a revenue dip per se. Right? We've had like a 5% increase in revenues from Q2, as you can see. And I think on a full year basis, we will be in low single digit growth, which is a pretty good performance given the fact that almost 50 million worth of 10 contracts exited the system in April.
So you're saying a sort of single digit growth. This is for FY23, I believe, right? This is what you're saying.
But
how do we look at this number next year, given probably the contracts that are probably in the pipeline, etc.? I mean, FY24.
Again, FY24 should go back to pre-COVID type performance, which is like, you know, 7 odd percent, 7%, 6%, 8% in that ballpark range. That's what we've done for the last 10 years pre-COVID. So I'm hoping that we go back to that.
Okay.
Mind you that the base of the international business is pretty significant now, with almost 850 million Australian dollars worth of annual business.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you that, you know, now the base is significantly higher, so is like 7-8% achievable, given that, you know, the market share is already high.
Oh, our goals are always aspirational. So, you know, our goal is to maintain that trend. And I think Australian market should come back in line, yeah. As of right now also, there is no dearth of contracts. Actually, the problem in Australia is that, you know, like all European and markets, Australia is also facing acute labor shortage. So, you know, we are only taking on contracts selectively, which are higher rate contracts, where, you know, we have easy access to manpower, etc.
The other thing was, you know, I remember you had called out that, you know, you'd be reaching 5% margin in India business by Q4. I think you already sort of almost reached there in Q3 itself, which is a good thing. Now, can we see this number going to 5.5 or 6 in that vicinity next year, or this is where it will sort of stabilize?
No, I think I've said this repeatedly, and I'm reinforcing the fact, I see no reason why our pre-COVID margin performance on security in India, which was ballpark 6%, in FM, which was ballpark 6% plus, and in international markets, which was ballpark 4.5%. I see no reason why we should not go back to these levels. It's taking a little bit more time, than you know, one would have liked. But fundamentally, the business or the market share or the, you know, pricing power, nothing has changed. In fact, SIS is a far stronger market leader today than we were pre-COVID. Not because we have actually grown stronger, it's actually because our competition has taken a much bigger hit during COVID.
Right. That was actually something I wanted to ask, that you know, because we don't get numbers of many of these unlisted security companies in India, given the goal that SIS has for 2025 in terms of market share, etc., how has that progressed in the last four quarters or so in terms of market share gains, etc., specifically to the Indian security companies?
Well, I think, look, I'd be able to comment about this as I see the FY23 numbers of the key competitors. But as of right now, I can say that, you know, as the India security business heads to a high teens growth, you know, it's definitely more than minimum wage increase plus GDP growth. So we are picking up market share. If we are growing more than the GDP expansion plus the minimum wage expansion in the country, that basically means that you're picking up market share. So if GDP is 6% and, you know, the wage inflation is around about 5-6% this year, 10-11%, and you are growing 15-16-17%, then you've picked up market share. That's the rule of thumb or helicopter view on life. But I'd still wait for FY23 numbers of our key competitors to be published before I make a comment which is more specific.
Sure, sure. Thanks a lot, Vikrash, for the detailed answers, and all the best to their best.
Thanks, buddy.
Before we take the next question, we'd like to remind participants you may enter star and one to ask a question. The next question is from Dharma Venkateshan KB, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. Am I audible, sir?
Yes, yes, you are. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sir, I just wanted an update on the Henderson. So last quarter you had mentioned that we might be breaking even in this quarter. So I just wanted to know how the things standing out there and what is the current status of.
Sorry, can you repeat that? We didn't quite catch the question. I'm sorry.
Sir, I just wanted to know the update regarding Henderson. So last quarter you had mentioned that there were some issues we were facing and we might be able to possibly break even by Q3 or Q4. So I just wanted a color on it. Hello.
And Mr. Dharma Venkateshan, you may go ahead.
Yes, sir. Sir, I just wanted an update regarding Henderson. So how is the thing panning out there? Because last quarter you had mentioned that we were facing some pressure in terms of EBITDA level break even. So I just wanted a color on it.
I think Henderson is coming back well. They are actually, they've picked up a few interesting contracts in the last quarter. The management team has finally started to deliver new sales nicely. You know, the easing of labor supply from Malaysia, you know, is also helping. So overall, it's better than before. But I guess before I make any specific commitments in this regard, I'd like to watch a few more quarters, at least two quarters before, you know, we can say that it's an established trend.
So are we still losing money out there, or it has come at least EBITDA level break even?
No, it is EBITDA negative.
Okay, sir. And how is the SPS acquisition panning out?
Let me qualify that. The annual EBITDA negative impact out of Singapore would be ballpark 5 crores annual basis. So on a quarterly basis, even if, you know, the impact is like 1.5 crores of cash drain.
Okay, sir. Okay, got it, sir. And how is the SDS acquisition panning out? And some more color on that also will be helpful.
On what, sorry?
SDS. SDS.
SDS, you know, we picked up, it's a smallish deal. We picked it up, you know, at a very fairly low price of $5 million. And I think the business is stable. It hasn't grown since the acquisition, for sure. But it's stable, and at the price at which we bought, it would be a 15% plus IRR deal for us, hopefully.
Okay, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any participant who wishes to ask a question may enter star and one. The next question is from the line of Vidit Shah from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the follow-up. Just one question on, you know, the cash flows in the international business. They seem to be quite low because given that the business is generally quite cash generative. What has happened there that has, you know, dented these cash flows, and do we expect a recovery in 4Q and by the end of 2023?
So this was just a one-off thing which happened. There was... Normally there are two payroll cycles in a month, and this time there were three payroll cycles in December across both the MSS and the SSP business. So that caused the OCF to temporarily go negative. But on a YTD basis, it has been positive. It will be positive back again in Q4. So it was just a one-off thing which took place in December.
Okay, and overall, what is the, you know, OCF to EBITDA conversion that we are targeting for FY23 and 24 on a consolidated basis?
So we generally have this target as a group to have 50% conversion, and we think we'll be close to that in Q4. Q4 is generally very good on cash flows, so by the end of Q4, we think we should be there.
Okay. But FY23 will be below that, but 24 you'll be able to catch up. Would that be correct?
No, I wanted to say that in FY23, by the end of Q4, we should hit that target. Generally, Q4 is very good for cash flows and collections. So we generally tend to catch up in the last two quarters, and we will do that.
Okay. Thanks so much for this explanation. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Alok Deshpande from Nuvama Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity again. Ritunaj, I had a strategic question. Now, you know, under India Security as well as Facility Management, we are running multiple brands as you know, in the past, as and when we have acquired companies. So in FM, we have DTSS, SFCA, etc.
Sorry to interrupt. If you're on a speaker mode, please switch it to handset. Your voice is kind of fluctuating.
Okay. Is it okay now?
Better. Thank you.
Okay. So, Ritraj, I was asking that we are currently having so many multiple brands because of, you know, all the acquisitions that have happened over the years. So, is there any thought process of, you know, combining all these brands under one SIS brand, or what are the merits of keeping these brands separate? So I'm just saying that if, you know, probably they all come under one umbrella, maybe from a brand positioning, it might have a bigger impact. I know there'll be a one-time transitioning, but I just wanted to understand that thought process.
So for now, our thinking is that, you know, we want to build a house of brands, each brand suiting a different category. It's a little bit like your Kellogg's cereal rack, where you have something for people who are on a diet and people who are on a sugar rush. So there's something for everyone at the Kellogg store. Similarly, at SIS, you know, in facility management, we have a specialist FM company, which is into healthcare, which is rare. We have, you know, Service Master, which does large contracts, you know, a lot of government exposure there on railways and large institutional work. You know, DTSS is more into corporates. Some of them focus more up north, some of them focus more down south. You know, and each of these businesses grows aggressively. You know, the FM business, for example, has reported almost a 40% growth for 2 years back-to-back post-COVID. You know, like we said that it's the biggest winner out of COVID. Even if you see in security, you know, we have a multi-brand strategy. There is Tech SIS, which does electronic security. There's VProtect that does alarm monitoring response type work. Then there is, you know, SIS, SLV Unique. SLV focuses on North India market. Unique focuses on Bangalore and South India market. SIS is a national player. So that's the way we position our brands, and so far it's working well for us. Yes, in theory, if you merge all these brands, you know, you might have a bigger impact, like you said. But as of right now, we see no reason to make that change. Because, mind you, all these businesses work on a common back-end shared service platform. So if they are not duplicating legal and taxation and secretarial and so many other functions. So, you know, these are synergized brands, as I call them. They operate independently, but they also operate as a group.
Mm-hmm. So where I was coming from, the Dipraj, was like, you know, like for example, if, you know, let's say BTSS, whether, you know, people in the ecosystem are generally aware whether, you know, SIS owns BTSS. So I'm just saying from a brand visibility perspective.
There is no confusion there, Alok. I don't know how you pick it up. There is no confusion at all. I think everybody knows. In fact, all these logos very clearly have an underlying statement. It's like a SIS group enterprise.
Okay, okay. Understood.
It's abundantly clear. There's no confusion there.
Okay, understood. And Dipraj, just one last question on Indian security. We are at about, 182 branches now. Where will there be more investment in branch expansion if we are targeting this 15% to 20% growth there? Or you think that from a branch network perspective, it's sort of well penetrated? What's the strategy there?
I think we are very well penetrated branch presence-wise. Now the focus is growing the monthly revenue per branch from ballpark, you know, give or take 2 crores range to 4 crores range.
So that means that the incremental revenue actually should come at much higher margins because, you know, you already have the...
Yeah, there will be operating leverage there.
Great. Thanks, Dipraj, for this.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Garima from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for the opportunity. No,
sorry to interrupt, Garima. Your audio is not clear. Can you switch to handset mode or move to an area where there's better network? Thank you.
Yes. Is it better now?
Management team, are you able to hear Garima?
Yeah, more or less. Let's hope we can hear a theory.
Okay. Thanks for this opportunity. Now, Dipraj, my question basically is, if I look at your performance versus, let's say, FY20, right, before COVID hit, your revenue for both India security as well as facility management are about, let's say, 25 to 40, 45% higher. Whereas your margins are still not back up to those levels. And if I put this in context of the fact that you're also saying that competitive intensity has gone down post-COVID, what is it really that is aiding margins? Is it simply because your clients have become more cost-conscious and are pushing back on escalations of prices? Or, you know, I'm just trying to understand the dichotomy here.
So, Garima, firstly, it's good to hear from you, long time. So, specifically, if I get the gist of your question, as regards to the margins, the gross margin of SIS has remained pretty stable through the entire COVID years. In the last 10, 12 quarters, the gross margin did not take a beating. It was our SG&A, which was all over the place. There were a lot of COVID-related expenses initially, then they went out, then there was post-COVID increase in travel and conferences and meetings and client interactions and hiring, which bumped up the SG&A. You know, the turbulence was in the SG&A segment, not in gross margin. Now, as SG&A is settling down and growth is picking up, we are going back towards the margin profile that we had pre-COVID, which is 6% for security. So I don't see that we are getting better terms from clients, or we are having less or more competition from, you know, the other players in the industry. It's none of the two. It's actually just us settling back.
Okay, got it. And you, I mean, I've listened to the call, and basically you were indicating that sometime in FY 2024, we should see these margins, especially for the India businesses, at least reverting back to those pre-COVID levels.
Yeah, like I said, I have been repeatedly saying gross margin is at 12% plus. We believe that, you know, SG&A will settle, and we will hopefully move back towards, you know, our pre-COVID normal levels.
Okay. Understood. That's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is a follow-up from the line of Dharma Venkatesan KB, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the follow-up opportunity. So I just wanted to understand the growth that we are seeing in our CAS business, which is actually a very good growth when we compare to Q-on-Q or Y-on-Y. So I just wanted to know what is enabling us to grow this much, and, like, how sustainable is this going forward, is what I want to know.
Our CAS business is the second largest CAS business in the country, and it has outgrown the largest CAS company by far this year. You know, the largest CAS company is a listed company. You can look at their growth numbers and compare that to our CAS segment. You will see that we are not only growing twice the pace, we have also maintained almost a 14%-15% EBITDA margin in FY 2023. As of right now, because it's a minority position for us, it's not fully reflecting in the result. I'm glad that you took time to understand and discuss the CAS business. I believe that in years to come, there could be an opportunity for us to spin off the CAS business and create value for our shareholders.
Sir, I just wanted to understand that, like, I just compared the numbers with the largest player, and we were beating them hands down. So I just wanted to understand that what we might be doing differently or what is enabling us to show this kind of growth is what I'm trying to understand.
We just have better execution, my friend.
Okay. Okay. And in our international business, there is a decline Y-on-Y. That is mainly due to that we had COVID contracts last year, and that is not present this year. That's all right, sir?
Absolutely correct answer.
Okay, sir. Fine, sir. Thank you, sir, and all the best for the coming quarter.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Dhaval, an individual investor. Please go ahead. Dhaval, could you please unmute your line and go ahead with your question?
Hello. Yes, so my question is, there has been some decline in the margins, so, and yes, you have already guided to improvement, but specific to the CAS business that was just talking about, what has been the reason for some sort of decline in margin, some fluctuation in margins, right, that we see over the last three, four quarters?
Yes. So, actually, the steady state is around 15%-16% of EBITDA margin is steady state. So, sometimes what happens that we may have made a provision for some doubtful debts at some point, and we would have got the money back, and so we would have reversed that provision. So that's the only thing which has caused the fluctuation in the last two or three quarters. Otherwise, steady state is between 15%-16%.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to Mr. Rituraj Sinha for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, everyone, for joining the call. If I look at the numbers of this quarter, I see that what we have given in terms of discussion in the past, which is that we are focusing on revenue growth and margin improvement both at the same time, is clearly playing out. We have demonstrated margin improvement in India security would seem to be the biggest area of concern for everyone. Like Devesh pointed out, the facility management margin is a blip and it will start coming back on track. So the margin story is coming back strongly. As regards to the revenue growth, we have demonstrated the recession resistant nature of our revenues, the predictability of our revenues. Mind you, the growth that we are reporting in the 9 months in security, in FM, in cash is not on the back of a large minimum wage bump up. This is purely volume growth led change. And as, like for example, today I was reading that Gujarat has increased minimum wages by 30% after an 8-year gap. Gujarat state had not increased minimum wage materially for 8 years. And then they've, you know, they've pushed through with an 8%, 30% hike. Now this has a direct corresponding impact on all my contracts in Gujarat. And because there's a, you know, rate increase clause on pro rata basis, it has flow through impact on the EBITDA as well. So growth is coming back right now without big rate price revision or minimum wage revision. And when volume growth is combined with higher wage revision in the coming years in the run-up to elections, I think this could be very interesting in terms of growth. Lastly, I'd like to underline something that wasn't discussed on the call today, is the fact that we reported one of our best DSO performances. You know, the fact that we have grown so much without increasing our working capital employed in the business, our days of sales outstanding have been flat, we've kept a tight control on that, shows, you know, our grip on both customers, new and old, for timely payments. And obviously that's translating to a key number, which is return on equity. We have again maintained a 16% plus return on equity. Again, I would like to remind everybody that through the last 3 years or 12 odd quarters, pre-COVID to now, our return on equity has maintained between the 15 to 20% level, which underlines the nature of the business. This is a annuity revenue business. It is a low capital capex business. It has little to no gestation period. And it is highly cash generative. We have given out more than 200 crores in terms of buybacks in the last 2 years. And also delivered a return on equity of 16% now and between 15% to 20% in the last 3 years. This is demonstrative of the power of this platform. And I believe that some of the concerns that people have had in the coming quarters, they will be largely addressed as we move back to pre-COVID levels of performance. Thank you very much for your patience. Look forward to speaking to you sometime soon.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of SIS Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.